Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Beyond the Numbers. As always, I am Ben, and this is Will.
What up, everybody?
And today, we are going to get into, as always, our favorite sport, or at least mine, football.
This is gonna say, that's not my favorite sport, sir.
It's tolerable, but it's mine. It's mine. And of course, it's hard being a Dolphins fan right now, for sure, sir. So I understand your pain.
Jesus Christ. Yes, it is.
It is tough to be a fan of the Dolphins this year. In fact, it's been tough to be a Dolphins fan for a long time, if we're being brutally honest, sir. Ever since the Dan Marino era faded into oblivion, I don't think there's ever been a good shining moment for the Dolphins. It's been a rough many years.
All right, sir. You can let it go. All right, I get it. But let's talk about those Packers, though.
Let's talk about them. What would you like to talk about? The game that we won? Granted, it wasn't my favorite by any stretch. After all, a 27-23 against a very broken Cardinals. It took us to the fourth quarter to get the win. To be entirely honest,
I was about to say y'all were looking rough that entire game, and the Cardinals looked great.
The Cardinals looked unnecessarily good with Jacoby Brissett, and let me be clear, they should not. Now, Trey McBride is a stud of a tight end, and he is a red zone threat against any defense. Doesn't matter how good you cover him. But Jacoby Brissett found him twice for touchdowns. Trey McBride continues to be a carrying dominant threat for the Cardinals. And it really irritates me to no extent. Their running game really was very lackluster behind Bam Knight. He didn't have a terrible game, but he didn't do much. 14 for 57. I mean, the man averaged like 4 yards. Like, his longest run was like 9 yards. He didn't do a lot. Again, it came down really to McBride. He caught the ball 10 times. Now, if you really want to look at it, one thing I will say, Jacoby Brissett, even going back to his days like in Indianapolis, he's not ever been terrible. He's a serviceable backup. In fact, he's a starter in certain capacities, not even just as a backup going into a starting role, but he is a starter for some teams. Like, if I were to say put him in New Orleans, logical. Putting him in Cleveland, if we didn't have the whole Shador Gabriel thing, probably logical. He's won some good games. He's had some good seasons. He's a very serviceable quarterback if you're needing a bridge player to get you from point A to point C, and he happens to be point B in the middle. With Kyler Murray out, he is a great backup to have step up. He's no Sam Darnold or Kirk Cousins backup type, or even Carson Wentz in Minnesota right now, and that was a really good game. But we'll get into that later. I just think that when it boils down to it, Arizona, they were just one or two good key pieces away from having a win. If it wasn't for the fact that they just couldn't get anything going on the ground, and Jacoby Brissett didn't, find Trey McBride or Marvin Harrison Jr. or any of his other targets for one or two more touchdowns, that would have been the game changer. So to be frank, we won, but we won a very sloppy game. It was definitely not our best. So.
Like I said, let's talk about those Packers. Almost,
but again, another 31-6.
Another sucky team. Okay,
31.
Like I told you, there was a lot of reasons for that loss.
No. We lost 13-10 on a blocked field goal. You all got blew out by Cleveland.
Okay, let's be clear. Tua only had 100 yards in that game.
Who cares?
100 yards, and then they put in a backup with Quentin Ewers.
Three.
I get it.
He was a booty trash.
Yes, he was. But let's be clear, he's been like that for the entire year.
Y'all
what is Jordan Love's excuse? What is Jordan Love's excuse? He can't have one.
They won the game. He can't have one. They won the game, sir. It doesn't
barely
matter.
They barely
still won the Dolphins
against a team that should not have even been close.
One of the worst teams in the league.
Oh my gosh. The Browns did beat y'all. So let's be clear. And they had no excuse to lose that game either. The
sir,
Packers
Dylan
have
Gabriel
no excuse to be losing games.
16 yards. Your thing with Tua, 116 yards for Dylan Gabriel, zero touchdowns, zero interceptions. Kinshawn Judkins, however, 25 rushes, 84 yards, which really isn't that great, but three touchdowns. Again, you want to talk about Green Bay and Arizona? Okay, let's talk about how bad Miami was against Cleveland, who had literally almost completely irrelevant play from their quarterback. He barely threw the ball. I mean, I'm sorry, but 13 of 18 for 116 yards.
Tua was not ready for this game. They already
what
knew
do you
he
mean,
wasn't
Tua
ready.
Tua wasn't
game.
Ready.
They only
this is
threw
week
him
seven.
In.
How is he not ready? Oh, that's right. He's
that's
blaming
the reason
his teammates.
Why they put Ewers in. That's why they put Ewers in. He was hurt. He was injured. He was not right
because
for
they
the
knew
game.
The Dolphins sucked and weren't going to win. Three interceptions. They didn't just start with Ewers, sir. They gave Tua three interceptions to make up their mind about it.
Once again, they knew that was going
to
happen.
Mike McDaniel,
that's why Ewers was already
is coming
there.
To a close as a head coach.
It needs to because he doesn't
it
actually
does.
Care about how the
and
team
Tua,
goes.
Tua needs to be sent away. He needs to go somewhere that's not the NFL. Send him to the Canadian Football League. Send him to the UFL. Anywhere that's not the NFL. Let him play in Summer League. He'll do well there.
Yeah, I'm sick of this. I get it. I do. It's not like I'm trying to defend the Dolphins' loss. But
in the worst way.
Mm-hmm. There's really nothing for me to say on it, sir. I can't really comment on how bad they actually did, but I can say that there were reasons for it, and the Dolphins still got some stuff to cook up. And whereas, yes, I agree with you that the Browns are trash, but I think that they're just trash in decision making. Because the Browns defense is arguably one of the best defenses in the league right now. I don't care what the numbers say.
They are. They
their
are
defense,
definitely one of the better
defense is a monster. And it's exactly what's been keeping them good in this league so far. It's not because of the offense. It's strictly because the defense refuses to die. That's
I mean,
it.
That's Cleveland's history. Like, that's how they've been for years. No matter how good their offense has been or has not been, no matter how great or how terrible, their defense has always been one of those that you just – they're downright dirty, they're downright mean, and they're scary. I mean, Myles Garrett is just the most current embodiment of their defense, but it goes back well before Myles Garrett. Their defense has historically, even if they haven't been in the top of the league, statistically, their defense has always had an impact. And none other than their own division knows that firsthand, which leads me into the importance of this game, the Steelers and the Bengals. With this particular game, we're talking about the Browns. The Browns may be slightly paving a way that could get them in somewhere into the talk. If they could somehow just continue to eat these type of wins away, we could be talking about a Browns playoff team in the future, because this division is a hot mess. Baltimore sucks. The Bengals just beat the Steelers 33-31 last Thursday night, sir. I don't think we really – there's nothing that we're going to sit here and say that's going to necessarily change many people's minds and make one think that, oh, the Browns are a playoff team, and they're really not. But this division is so bad, they might just be a playoff team because of that.
Let me be clear. They put Shador in, and I'm almost going to guarantee you the playoffs are coming.
They put Shador in, you know what?
I put so much faith in it. I can guarantee you at least the playoffs are coming. He may fail when it comes to that. But let's be clear. If I'm going to put Myles Garrett on defense and Shedeur Sanders as my head in my offense.
I mean, they got Judkins who's running like a machine. I mean,
this is what I'm saying. Like once you get the, because they already got the run game established, they already got the defense established. They really just need that one quarterback that's going to set them over the edge. Now, let me not say that Shedeur is going to be that one, but I can almost guarantee you he has what it takes to push the Browns just a tad bit.
I mean, there's still one problem though with that, and that is. Their receiving core is a little lackluster. Reality of it is, even if you put Shedeur in, his main targets are going to be Jerry Jeudy and David Njoku. And that is where I have a problem.
That's not a problem for me. I think it Jerry Jeudy definitely actually. I think Jerry Judy's actually amazing. He just needs a quarterback that can read him well.
Jerry Jeudy Njoku is,
speaks for itself.
Njoku, the problem with the – okay, here's the problem. Because while I don't necessarily disagree with you that Jerry Jeudy can be a great quarter – or I'm sorry, great receiver, he's still fairly young. He's only in his seventh season. He's talented. The only problem that I have with being Jerry Jeudy and David Njoku being the main targets, there's nobody else around him that does anything. I mean, Thrash, he's a rookie. So, I mean, you know, there's going to be some limitations there. You got another rookie in Bond. I mean, Marvin Gaye, he's a rookie. There's literally only one of their four main receivers is not a rookie. That is a problem because, yes, this could be their future. This could be the future. It could be the Jerry Jeudy, Kinshawn Judkins show for the next decade with all these young, talented guys they may have on offense. But we're talking 2, 3, 4 years down the road. Shedeur could play lights out, but he does not have a really true, solid, good number one receiver. And I'm sorry, but Jerry Judy's not that guy. Jerry Jeudy is not a number one receiver against a good defense. Jerry Jeudy looks like a number two or a slot receiver against a good defense, which is fine, except he's the number one guy. David Njoku, a threat anytime. Absolutely. But he's also in his 10th season, and he's not a young fella no more. He's 29 years old. The problem I have with him is, one, his ability to stay healthy. Last year was a rough year for him. I believe the year before might have been as well. He's not had a good, solid track record lately. And then secondly, Jerry Jeudy, good as he may be, he's the only main guy that they have. They rely on their running backs, really, to do a lot more of the work. And I understand to an extent what the thought process behind that. But I don't know that it's fair entirely to just simply lay that type of pressure on a guy like Shedeur to come in and to take what he has and run with it. If he does, it makes him look amazing. If he doesn't, it makes him look like the system failed him like it has so many quarterbacks in Cleveland. It's not going to be Shador's fault. I'll never set the. I'll continue to say this. Cleveland ruins quarterbacks. When you get drafted to Cleveland, or you play your very first game in the NFL in Cleveland or where for Cleveland, not necessarily in Cleveland, but for Cleveland, your career is already set on a downward skid. Baker Mayfield is the first quarterback in years who's left Cleveland and done a single thing for himself. You're not going to name me one quarterback outside of Baker who's done that.
I can't. Baker Mayfield is amazing to me, even though
he is elite, and I want to talk about him because he's playing tonight.
He's actually losing tonight. You don't want to.
It's not a good night for him. It's a 14-0 game. But to clarify, games are won in the second half, and while they're losing 14-0, games are won in the second half.
He also has 29 yards. They're getting bullied out there right now.
They are.
They have about 47 yards altogether. Let's 57 be clear, yards though. Altogether Baker, in offense.
The only thing is Detroit has scored a touchdown in the first and then one in the second quarter. They've not been lights out. 14-0.
Oh, no. Mike Evans is down.
That was coming. That was destined to happen. Now, here's the other thing. Here's the problem that I see right now with Baker. He's been sacked 7 times. He's on his way to a league high in sacks in a game. They've also
not mobile.
Well, yes, he is. Baker's mobile. The problem is he's not mobile in the same sense as a scrambling quarterback. He's more like your, if I have to run, I can get a few yards because I'm not super slow. But he knows, like, he's not doing Lamar things and doing, you know, some crazy, you know, 40-yard
breakoff. He's not even doing Mahomes things. Mahomes could at least break off for a good 20. Good 12.
I mean, Baker could too.
He's not, I don't think so. I think Baker, if he does, it's by a complete desperation, by the way. He's not coming out of the pocket by choice. And when he does, I don't think he's actually tracking down. I don't think he's tracking anything down, you know. I think he's really just trying to get those couple of yards that he needs.
Well,
like he's not what I think of in a mobile quarterback. Neither is Jared Goff, neither is Matthew Stafford. I'm just thinking of, yes, they can take off for it, but 9 times out of 10 they were destined to do it.
Well, let's look at it like this. Baker's ran some, would you agree, this year? He's been fairly mobile and he's got out of the pocket a lot. The game against the Texans in what, week 3 or something like that was a really rough game, but he moved. Baker can move. Joe Flacco broke off an insane 10, 11 yard run last week. Crazy talk against the Steelers. And insane. He's not mobile. If Baker would have done that, people would have been like, hey, that was a good run. But like, they wouldn't think about it and wouldn't talk about it like Joe Flacco doing that. Because Baker is not, while he's not the embodiment of Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes or whatever, he's still competitive with the run. He can still move. If they want to run an RPO, they could. Might look a little silly from Baker, but they could.
Dak's not mobile. I think it's going to look really ridiculous. I think it's going to look really ridiculous. Once again, I get it. I get what you're saying. I'm not saying that he can't do it. I'm saying that he's not he's not what I think of when I think of a mobile quarterback. I think of him as a lights out thrower. So,
that's just me. He's no Jaden Daniels. He's no Lamar Jackson. He's none of them names that, you know, you would associate with it. But, I mean, again, this game really would be a different story if Jahmyr Gibbs hadn't have got off and took off. The dude's ran 11 times for 107 yards and he's got a touchdown. That's just crazy. He's over 100 yards and he's got a touchdown. They're not even through the first half. Gibbs realistically is going to have one of the most explosive games of the week, I think. He already really has, but the Bucs defense.
Oh yeah,
it's only
the second quarter, and he has 107. He's doing
well. I mean, the second quarter is almost over, and at this point, I mean, granted, Goff is driving down the field right now. So here's the thing: this is a big game for Detroit because they definitely, I think they have a little bit of something to not necessarily prove, but I feel like that the Lions know that after their loss to the Chiefs last week in week 6, that they have to kind of bounce back against this in this game against a really good team and reestablish themselves, because the Lions have kind of looked a little iffy, even though they were winning before that. You know, they lost week 1 to the Packers, and I know we kind of talked about this, but they haven't, while they've had some dominant games, it hasn't been necessarily dominant games against dominant teams. The Chiefs have struggled and put on a pretty good clinic against the Lions. So the Lions need to have that in their mind, and I think they do that. The Bucs, they need to beat the Bucs, and they need to beat them good. It's good for them. It's good for them to say, okay, we lost 30-17 to the Chiefs. It's the Chiefs. The Bucs are 5-1 on the year right now. They are a much better team in many ways than the Chiefs are. We come out here. We show the league that we are the Lions. We are not to be messed with. This is our year type thing. And they do that by beating the Bucs tonight. And the Bucs, they take a loss. It was going to happen again, a second loss. The Bucs are beaten up. They got a lot of work they got to do. But 7 sacks against Baker? Bro, that offensive line is garbage.
They are. And that was going to be my second point to it. Not only is Baker not a mobile quarterback to me, but his offensive line does not protect him as much as they should. He would have way more. I feel like Baker Mayfield would be up there with some of the elites if he had the line to defend him. Because he went from a bad line in Cleveland to a bad line in the Buccaneers, if we're being honest. So,
well,
if we're thinking about it logically, Baker Mayfield has so much potential. If he was on the Chiefs, I think it would be the exact same thing.
The Chiefs have a even worse one too.
No, I'm talking about over the years.
Oh,
no, not just this year. Not just this year.
Well, I think Baker. I think Baker is in about as good of a position he could ask for outside of his offensive line. The Bucs defense, for years, even back like to the days of like Jameis Winston and even maybe even a little before him, but during the Jameis Winston era, that defense was always on point. And that was because Winston was a turnover machine. That man could throw – I think he set the league high at one point in interceptions in a season by – I think he threw more – I have to go look up the stat, but he threw a lot of interceptions one year in particular. And they gave him another chance the year after too. But like Jameis Winston was a magnet for interceptions. He threw the ball found a defender. It found the defender as many times as it found a receiver. You know, when you got a quarterback like that, you got to think in your, you know, as a coach, like, man, like, you know, we may get some touchdowns, and they did. Jameis Winston could throw some touchdowns, but he's going to throw the ball and throw a lot of turnovers. So, you know, their defense, the Bucs, just they've always had a good linebacker core. They've always been kind of mean in their cornerbacks. They've never really been a bad, truly bad defense. It's just their offense has always been terrible. They could win a lot of games, but they could also drop a lot. And that was always their problem. That's why they were a middle of the league type of team, because their defense and then their half-on, half-off offense could carry them, you know, 7, 8, 9 wins, but never enough to really, truly, fully push them over the edge. And right now they got an offense. I mean, if it was fully healthy, man, I mean, you're talking Bucky Irving, you're talking Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Kate Otten, Egbuka. You're talking about a team that, I mean, if we're being honest, they should not be struggling. But – and, of course, not knocking Baker, not leaving him out to leave him out. He's their quarterback, so obviously he's a big part of that, and he's shown that he's very capable. But when you're getting sacked 7 times, how are you supposed to compete against one of the best defenses in the league? You can't.
You're probably right, sir. I'm not knocking you because it makes a lot of sense. I think Baker Mayfield's elite. He just needs something. He needs something more in his team. Something more that he's not getting.
What Baker Mayfield needs is an offensive line. And what Baker Mayfield needs is what we see teams like the Cowboys, who had a phenomenal game against the Commanders. That's what they gave Dak Prescott. You know, that's what they gave their running game. That's what they gave and said, hey, we got you. 3 touchdowns, 264 yards for Dak. He had himself another quarterback clinic. The man has been balling out. Like, respect for sure, because their record doesn't reflect, honestly, lately, how good they've been. Javonte Williams had himself a game. CeeDee Lamb was out there, got himself a touchdown, you know. And obviously, it's good to have your star receiver back. But, like, the offensive line did their job. Their defense more than adequately did their job. When everything clicks, you put Baker in Dak's shoes, Baker throws these touchdowns, not Dak. You put Dak in Tampa, Dak gets sacked 7 times. It's the offensive line. Most people forget that games are won or lost in the trenches. Your offensive line sucks, your quarterback's going to suck, your running back's going to suck. Your defensive line sucks, you're never going to stop the run, you're not going to pressure the quarterback. You're not going to create any disruptive plays. You're not going to get off the edges. You're not going to do any of the things that you need to do unless you are doing your job in the trenches. That is what teams like the Cowboys were able to do successfully this week against Washington.
I love it. Speaking of the Cowboys, they got to see the Broncos this next week, and I do not see them taking this loss, but let me be the first to say, if they do, I'm gonna be very disappointed. But we're not talking about next week. we're talking about this week. And with that being said, moving on. The Cowboys took a very good dub. Absolutely. The Commanders looked very lost out there against the Cowboys, and I actually love to hear that. I don't understand why the Cowboys struggle so much, but in this game, Dak Prescott did not. It was 264 yards, 21 for 30 with 3 touchdowns. So that is quarterback brilliance. We would love to see that out of any quarterback in this league. CeeDee Lamb on the return caught his, I believe, because I don't remember. I gotta go back and look, but I don't think he had a touchdown before he got injured last time.
He did not. I do not believe he did.
So he caught his first touchdown of the season.
Yeah, and that's like George Pickens, right? We talked about this earlier on in when we first started up this podcast, one of our earlier episodes. We were talking about the Dolphins. You need a good, true number one and a good, true number two. George Pickens is capable of playing that number one spot, but he's also a number two. He is dangerous. The Cowboys struggled without CeeDee Lamb a little bit more. Now that CeeDee Lamb's back, boom. CeeDee Lamb has himself a game, but if he's not having a good game, guess who's going to have another phenomenal game? And if neither one of them are, you can't forget Ferguson. Ferguson went ham, 2 freaking touchdowns, sir. He got the ball 7 times for a measly 29 yards, but he caught all 7 of them because he got 7 targets. He was 7 of 7, but he got 2 touchdowns. That's
what again, you want out of your tight end. Exactly. Like I was saying, this is a great game. All around, this game was beautiful. You talked about George Pickens. He was 4 for 6 on receptions with 82 yards himself behind CeeDee Lamb's 110. Like, it is like
a that is number two.
That entire lineup did exactly what they were supposed to do. From Dak, Javonte, we didn't even say beautiful anything game about him. But Javonte Williams, 116 yards, 1 touchdown, and his longest touchdown was at 33-yard touchdown. Did you see that? I mean, that 33-yard run?
I did not
that's
see.
That's the one that he had.
I didn't watch him on this game, but yeah, Javonte Williams,
Let me see.
He bounced back from his rough game.
not the touchdown, that run. It was almost a touchdown. That's what it was. That was one of those 2-yard Jake Ferguson touchdowns.
And we can't forget Jaden Blue is getting some reps in this game. He ran the ball 7 times. Honestly, Dak ran 5 times. They ran the ball 31 times as a team for 152 yards. I mean, Dak was 21 of 30, 264. I mean, the dude only got sacked 1 time. Pretty much a flawless game, really. The only thing that they could have done more really would have been just run up the score more. That's it. There's nothing more. I mean, their defense was they got an interception. Bland got himself a pick, which actually was a touchdown, I might add. They had a forced fumble. Dak did fumble the ball, but they recovered it. So that didn't hurt them too much. I mean, they only punted the ball 3 times, man. That's it. The entire game, 3 times. Let's just see how many times Washington did that. Commanders, yeah, they punted 5 times. Now, to be fair, 5 is a reasonable number in a game, and they put up 22 points. However, you can't do that against a team like Dallas. So what did Jaden Daniels do? He wasn't terrible. He did get hurt, I do believe, in that game, but not severely. Jaden Daniels only got 156 yards, and he got himself a touchdown. He had a clean game when it came to passing, no interceptions. He ran the ball, got himself a rushing touchdown. But here's the thing that I do want to give a little credence to, because he did not play the full game. So Marcus Mariota had to come in and he did absolutely terrible, as one would expect. But the one thing I would like to point out here is the rushing game for Washington. Jaden Daniels was the best rusher on the team in almost every category except for Marcus Mariota had a better average. He ran the ball 8 times for 35 yards. That was the most yards from any single player on the rushing game. He was the only one. I'm sorry, Rodriguez. They had a rushing touchdown. They had 2 rushing touchdowns compared to the 1 passing touchdown. They did not do anything. They had a fumble loss. They didn't get any interceptions. They literally only got him 1 time for a sack, whereas there were 4 sacks against the Washington Commanders, twice for Daniels, twice for Mariota. There's no way to have an answer for that unless you come into this game and you say, okay, we know this is going to be a rough one, and this is what we're going to do to combat what they're going to throw at us. But then the other problem is your only good receiver at all is not even your receiver. It's your tight end. Zach Ertz was the only legitimate true threat, in my opinion, on that field. The rest of the guys were serviceable, but, like, again, we're talking going up against Dallas. You can't do what they did against Dallas. You could do that against Miami. You could do that against the Jets, the Giants. You could probably get away with it against, maybe, if you're lucky, you could get away against the Saints right now with it. But any halfway capable team, and right now, I would even say the Browns, beat this team.
Agreeable. It's the Commanders got a whole lot of work to do. And, I mean, last year they showed out, but you could also see the holes. This is why they didn't go as far as they should have. But when you're coming, when you're talking about a team that has nothing but potential, I don't see any reason to count them out of anything coming next year or the year after that. So,
well, talking about teams with holes, I want to talk about briefly the Colts and the Chargers game. I'm just going to say this. I'm kind of concerned about any team that has to play against the Colts this year. I might have to quietly, you know, not even quietly anymore. I might have to legitimately say loudly that I think the Colts might legitimately be a contender this year. Not just because of their record, but because they are a team that does not have many, if any, holes. Any holes that one might have expected for other teams to exploit has not happened. 1 loss. That's it. And they do not look bad. Jonathan Taylor is a freak of nature this year. He used to be a few years ago. Then the whole contract debacle and the injuries, Jonathan Taylor fades off into oblivion. Then he comes back, but he's still quiet. Now he's got Danny Dimes Jones out here throwing buckets, and he's running 3 touchdowns against the Chargers.
Insanity. That game, once again, quarterback perfection. We're not we're talking about a team that is actually doing amazing despite everything they went through last year. Because the Colts, you could not talk about the Colts like this last year at all.
No, not at all.
So when we're talking about quarterbacks and running backs, and Alec Pierce had the 98 yards, but let's be clear, Michael Pittman got in there, Tyler Warren got in there,
yeah,
and Jonathan Taylor got in there 3 times.
Three.
This team is actually doing amazing this year. 6-1.
And let's not forget.
I thought they were going to start taking some losses.
I mean, I figured a couple were going to happen. But no, just one.
That's it.
Yeah.
They are 6-1, sir.
And here's the thing. Again, we talk about I talk about the trenches. One sack. That is insanity. He had only nine incompletions. A clean game. Who sits here and says Daniel Jones is going to have that when you have and win a game when you have Justin Herbert going 37 of 55? Granted, they ran the ball 16 times. That's it. And half of that was practically Justin Herbert. Three touchdowns, two interceptions, sacked three times, 420 yards. In what world would we have said that, oh, the Colts are going to travel to the Chargers and they're going to beat them on the road in a very resounding manner? They gave up 24 points, but at that point, it was in the third quarter. They had already put up the points they needed to win the game. It was garbage time numbers. And the Colts put up 15 in the third quarter, and the Chargers put up 14. So the Colts made sure that they kept that big lead. They won the game by 14 freaking points. The Chargers are garbage this year. That win against the Chiefs set them up. They thought that's their peak. They climbed their peak in week one, and then wasn't long after they came tumbling down. And the Chargers have some holes that they need to address, and a lot of that is at the running back. They do not have a serviceable running back. They do not have a serviceable receiving core at this point, and their defense, again, I get it. Jonathan Taylor is a beast this year, but you gave up 5 touchdowns to the Colts. There's nothing more to even say to that. That's just embarrassing if you're the Chargers.
It is. Justin Herbert, though he threw for 420 yards, he had 2 interceptions in that game too. It wasn't a pretty sight. not.
Tell me why he's the rushing leader for them as well right now in this game. Like,
and that's just because they don't actually have a running game. They know they don't have a running game, which is why he can throw, which is why he has to throw for 400 yards.
Tell me how this makes sense. Okay. Gadsden, Allen, and Johnston, all three had touchdowns. I mean, McConkey had a decent game, but like, I don't get it. Again, this is a game where if you put them and the Commanders against each other with how their games were, phenomenal game, a very even matchup. Who would have said that the Colts, after the last 4 or 5, really ever since Andrew Luck left, let's just say that, from Andrew Luck until this year, nothing. Even in their decent years, nothing. How are you going to tell me that out of nowhere, they just are like, it's like magic. Boom. They snapped fingers, cast a little spell, changed coaches a few dozen times and said, hey, here we go. We're going to throw this out here and we're going to grab Daniel Jones. Why not? Terrible quarterback. Throw him out here if Anthony Richardson can't work out. Anthony Richardson is useless. He is like a piece of glass. And they continue to win games, whether it's close, whether it's not. They continue to win, and they won this game just like my cousin. I love my cousin a lot. He's a Colts fan. And we kind of went back and forth at the beginning of the year, and I kind of was like, well, it's Daniel Jones, so y'all are probably gonna have a rough year. And Anthony Richardson is not your savior here. You know, he was mediocre at Florida at best, and then he proved to be like a piece of glass every single season that he's played. He can't stay healthy at all. And again, okay, that's a problem that he needs to figure out. Maybe he needs to go ahead and say, hey, let me go ahead and get out of the league. I don't think this is for me. The man needs to take care of himself. But what they figured out, what sort of concoction of ingredients they put in the pot this time and spun it around and said their little voodoo spells over it, man, they went down to New Orleans. They went down there and got what they needed to pull some voodoo out, because the Colts are, whoo, and I am truly terrified to see how this could go for the rest of the league this year. Because if we're being honest, can you name off more than maybe 2 teams right now who realistically would probably beat them any given week?
I think Let me see.
There's at least two. There's two that I feel confident that would beat them on probably any given week.
I was going to say, I want to put another Slumdog team up against them. The Giants? I think the Giants could beat them.
I'm talking like if the Colts were to play them every week for the rest of the week, are there more than two teams that would have a chance to beat them pretty much?
The Giants.
You would take the Giants to beat them and have more wins than losses against them for the rest of the year?
Yes.
No. If you would have said Detroit, I would have said yes to Detroit. Because
Detroit is obvious, but I want to put an underdog team up against them.
Well, okay, underdogs, yeah. You know who I think, if they're healthy, would have their number?
Who's that?
Carolina.
Well, see, that's what I'm talking about. See, get down to my level, sir. This is what
Carolina
I'm talking
about. Carolina's been a sneaky team. They are a sneaky team, and Rico Dowdle is not to be messed with. He put on a clinic just like Jonathan Taylor. Rico Dowdle is Jonathan Taylor's, and they were to play each other every week for the rest of the year. I think that matchup alone will be crazy. And honestly, Bryce Young is doing his job. It's just the offensive line needs to do better. So,
like I told you, I love my Panthers, sir. They definitely are a team to be reckoned with. It doesn't matter what they're going through. Regardless,
and then
they'll give you a run for your money.
I think if it wasn't Carolina, and if it was one other team, because like I said, more than two teams. If I was going to say two teams, obviously it's going to be Detroit and the other one's going to be Dallas. I think that those two teams would have more wins than losses for the rest of the season if they play the Colts every single game. If I was to go outside of that, I would say for an underdog, Carolina, Seattle, because I think Seattle is well-rounded. I think they do have the ability to win more games than lose, although I still think, if I was being honest, I would still pick Indy. But if I was going to say an underdog that I think could do it, it would be either, again, Seattle, Carolina, or possibly, and this is kind of an iffy one, but Jacksonville. Those are the three that I would say if I was to pick one of those three teams in the league that have a chance to get more than 50% wins against them, if they played them every game for the rest of the year, it'd be one of them three.
That is the one game that I want to touch on, because we only got a couple more minutes and I definitely want to talk about the NBA. But what happened to the Jaguars this week? Last week, they went from beating the reigning Super Bowl champs to, was it the rain?
Well,
what happened? Like when I was watching the game,
I think
Trevor Lawrence was throwing all types of damage. I don't understand. Well, I was just saying that Trevor Lawrence was throwing up every bad ball that he possibly could. I don't understand what that was. It looked horrible. I don't even know how to describe that.
I could tell you what it was. It was Trevor Lawrence doing what Trevor Lawrence does. Now, to be fair, he didn't throw any interceptions, so I'll give him that. But Trevor Lawrence did what Trevor Lawrence does, and that is make some of the most questionable and suspect throws you could make. He had almost 300 yards. He threw one touchdown, but he completed sub 50% of his passes. I'm just being honest when I say this. The Jaguars should not have the wins that they do. The only thing, the Jaguars have been able to come up with some strangely effective game plans. Liam Cohen has found that with what he has to work with, he is successful. But for all of the Duval that he put into the preseason, yeah, it's ultimately going to do fall whenever it's due fall time. You know, it's time for the fall. And I'm here for it. I can't stand the fact that Trevor Lawrence still gets chance after chance. The dude should have been out forever ago. The man has no reason to even be a starting quarterback at this point in the league. But the Jaguars don't ever they're gluttons for punishment. They continue to do it to themselves. They've had great running backs. They've had great receivers. They've had year after year of great defenses at times. And yet they continue to stick with T-Law. Why? That's okay. Why you see okay. What you see here.
Okay. Hold on. Because I want to say something. There were, even though I agree, he did absolutely horrible. And there were a lot of those throws that were completely on him. The rest of those throws, though, were dropped passes by receivers. Like, okay, let's take out the fact that he threw horrible balls. When he threw good ones, every receiver dropped them. It didn't matter who he threw to. They kept dropping it. While they were on, I was watching the game, and I'm sitting here like, bro, he's already doing horrible. Please catch the ball when he's actually hitting you.
Well,
it's just like I don't understand. When you're getting the ball, you should be grabbing the ball. And there was a whole lot of that. There was a whole lot of Trevor Lawrence throwing the ball just directly at the ground. Like, he wasn't even trying to hit the receiver. I don't know if he had his own under on this game or what, but it just turned into complete babbage. I don't understand.
There's not anything to understand. The only thing to understand is they are not good. They will not ever, with Trevor Lawrence, they will not ever be good. They are. I think
they got some potential. They just, once again, they beat the Eagles, sir. So that's why this surprised me.
The days of Blaine Gabbert and David Garrard and the Mustache Man are over. Those were the best days they've had in recent history. The Jaguars are terrible, and their record's reflective of the fact that they've just had some really weirdly successful games that should have never went the way they did. And they got blew out by the Rams. The Rams have set the record straight. The Rams have brought justice back to the league. The Jaguars should not be in any of the positions that they are in. Their successes have been based on really just downplayed performances by their opponents. And I will not stand for the Jaguars having any remotely sort of credibility, because until they get rid of Trevor Lawrence, they will continue to be a terrible offense. The rest of the offense is not going to succeed. Again, they're rushing 19 times as a team. They ran that ball, not a single touchdown. They didn't even make it over 100 yards. Trevor Lawrence got sacked 7 times. So there is a little bit of a breather there for him in that excuse. However, we're talking about they didn't do anything to accommodate. The only other thing that I would give T-Law here is that he doesn't really have a great receiving core.
Once again,
Travis Hunter is.
You're going all the way off on Trevor Lawrence, and I don't want to do that. Specifically because he did good last year too. It just wasn't enough.
And his numbers are self-reflective of one thing and one thing only. And that is the games that they win or lose doesn't matter in the long term, because most of the numbers, the scores, and the stats are reflective of a team that is either behind and they're just going out there to get what they can on get stats. Or they're winning games they really shouldn't be winning, and at this point, they're just trying to take advantage of a weak defense. Like, Trevor Lawrence, give me a time when he's MVP. Give me an MVP season. Give me that. I don't care about his hair. Stop with the hair. Chop the hair off. Go bald, man. Go get an MVP season. Worry about what you need to do on the field.
That's what it is. You want his hair. That you're jealous. I get it, because there's no other reason for you to be going off on this man like this. He's actually had some good games. Once again, that was a surprise last night. Regardless of what I've seen out of him over the years, I don't see what happened last night being like a repeat thing. He was throwing horribly. And I think it was a lot to do with the rain. I think they were out of their element a little bit. with this being an overseas game, I think they were, it was just a lot for them to do. And I don't think he's going to have another game like this. I would hope not. Because once again, they had a nice, they've had some nice games. They're 4-3, so they're not, it's not like they're winning.
It's a slide.
They're winning.
The slide's here. And talking about quarterbacks that have had uncharacteristically rough performance, I want to wrap tonight up with the 49ers and the Falcons. Now, let me ask you this, since you want to talk about being surprised by the Jaguars getting blown out. Did you expect this game to go the way that it went, considering what the Falcons just did to the Bills last week?
More than likely. First off, the Bills are doing – once again, the Bills are a weird team, and you need to be a fly on the wall to actually figure out what's actually going on in it, over there.
I agree.
It has nothing to do with football, I don't think. I don't think – I think there's some real personal issues going on in that locker room that's preventing everybody from, from cohesion. So but I don't want to compare that win.
But I'm not going to talk about him.
I'm just going to leave it as we need to be a fly on the wall so we can actually figure out what's going on, because the Bills are not performing to any form of good potential. It doesn't matter. Like, they've had some questionable wins against a lot of bad teams, and they just so happen to fall hard to the Falcons. So once again, the Falcons are not great. They're great when teams allow them to be. Okay,
but Bijan had a terrible performance.
But what do you expect? It's not like, okay, I get it. Bijan is great. I don't think Bijan's bad at all. I think he's a good, solid running back to have. But
I was being sarcastic there, by the way.
I would hope so. But either way, he's a good, solid running back to have. It's just when you're performing with the line that they have, the quarterback that they have, I don't think Penix is great at all. I think Penix has great moments, but so does any other quarterback that you put up there. I mean, Joe Flacco just threw lights out at 40 years old. We never really thought we was going to see that.
11 yards?
It's like, I mean, he ran for 11 yards. Who would have thought?
On one carry.
With those knees. He did that. He was bold. But once again, I think the Falcons have way more than a lot of work to do. You can't just have a solid running back. And their receivers aren't that great either. Drake London is probably their only shining star, and you can't get him the ball enough. You just can't. Darnell Mooney doesn't get any type of love.
Which is funny, because he was their leading receiver this week.
He doesn't get any form of love. He only had 3 receptions for those leading receiving yards. Like, he doesn't get any love out here. With these, and then you got to look at Kyle Pitts. He's not getting the same
performance, but he also got 10 targets. So
he's not getting the same love, though. He's not getting the same. Like, I don't know. It's like when you're dealing with a quarterback. Nobody's arguing with their defense. I'm talking about their offense, because if their offense was better, the defense wouldn't even matter. See what I'm saying? Like, that's how I feel about every football team. So, as long as you have a solid offense, you shouldn't even be worried about that defense. But sometimes that defense just bullies you. It happens. It's the game.
What do you think then that – what was the one – because I hear what you're saying. What was the one thing – because mind you, when we look at this game, it was a very poor game by both sides. In fact, Penix had a better game than Jones. Jones had one interception with no touchdowns. And
I don't know. I don't know if you thought I was trying to praise the 49ers, but no, I'm not. That was just an all slight to the Falcons.
What was the one key problem offensively that cost the Falcons this game? Because the defense, we know what the answer is. Christian McCaffrey, That's what cost the defense the game. They couldn't stop him. The dude was crazy. Another running back that has had some rough seasons lately due to injuries and trade and everything else. What specifically cost the Falcons offensively here? Because clearly the 49ers, all they had to do was just hand CMC the ball. So what fell with the Falcons?
The Falcon, once again, there's no – if we're comparing CMC to Bijan Robinson, there's no reason to do so.
Well
– but if there's a problem with the Falcons, it starts with that line.
He only got sacked twice.
Him getting sacked doesn't have anything to do with it.
They also only handed the ball 14 times to him. So
14 times, but Penix still did. Penix is still a problem. Penix is still a problem. The coaching is still a problem. The Falcons have a horrible coaching staff.
That's your answer, sir. Right there is your answer. It is the coaching, and that is what I stand on. My question to you then, if the coaching is the problem, should they have put Kirk Cousins out there?
I think Kirk Cousins has something to him.
I do too.
I think he had something.
The question is, do you think that he would have been a better quarterback in this situation than Michael Penix?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I wonder.
They have on the bench would be better than Michael Penix at this point. Michael Penix is not elite. He is not. I will not give him elite status. He is not doing anything elite. He is getting away with a lot of bull. If you want to talk about somebody that's skating past, Michael Penix is skating past with a lot. 3-3 is not a good record for this.
It is not.
It is not. For their actual performances, once again, I don't go by the numbers. I don't go by what I see on stat sheets. I go by what I see in person. And this, there's some problems here, and I won't put it all on Penix. Won't put it all on Bijan. I will put it all on that coaching staff, though.
Absolutely with you on that one.
But I definitely feel like it was a partial problem with Penix, and I think Bijan, he may not be elite, but he has the potential to be something that we talk about on a regular basis.
Come to Green Bay, Bijan.
He might do numbers. I think Josh Jacobs is y'all's best bet, though. He's a bully out there.
Imagine him and Bijan, though. Woo.
We're talking about another Green Bay, Detroit Lions situation.
Indeed, and I'm here in
Montgomery.
I'm here for it. And on that note, sir, I think we could probably call it a wrap tonight. Quick update, going towards the end of the third quarter. Lions are leading 21-9 over the Bucks. I don't know that I would say it's necessarily a wrap, but games are won in the second half, and right now it looks like the Bucks are not here to win the second half, and the Lions are looking to do so. I think it's safe to say that as we end this episode, my call is going to be the Lions are going to take this game by a rather large fashion.
Who do you think is going to win the late night game?
I think the Seahawks beat the Texans. I think the Texans are just falling apart. That's my call on that game. I'm not going to stay up to watch it. Probably I'm going to go to bed. However,
I'm going to disagree with you, sir.
I think
CJ Stroud's out there to prove something.
Okay. I'd like to see it. Make them competitive. Make that division a little bit more fun. Okay. Well, on that note, do you have anything else, sir?
I do not. Make sure y'all holler at us on social media.
Absolutely. There will be more clips coming out over the next couple of days, more tidbits of this episode, and more episodes to come. Last week was a bit of a hectic week, so we were kind of up and down a little bit. Apologies about that, everybody. We are back. We're looking to grow bigger and better. Again, thank you for all the downloads. I've seen it spiked up a little bit again. This goes to show that we're out there. We're getting to the people that want to hear us. We'll continue to produce that content. And on that note, that's all from me. So have a good night, everybody.
Peace.